Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Yasmin Khan, a reporter here at KUNM. June is Pride Month, and in the midst of mass demonstrations for racial justice and an ongoing pandemic, this year's celebration will undoubtedly look different. On this week's Let's Talk New Mexico, we look at the Black roots of Pride, including the 1969 Stonewall Uprising that paved the way for LGBTQ rights today. We'll hear about the contributions of Black and Brown people, women and trans people in the local and global Pride movement, and ask how the Black Lives Matter movement influences this year's events. And we want to hear from you. How are you celebrating your identity and community this month? What voices or experiences have been overlooked in the LGBTQ movement? Email letstalk@kunm.org. Use the hashtag letstalknm on Twitter or call in live during the show at 277-5866. And I want to welcome Brianne Rivera, director of the Black Trans Fund, which is part of the Groundswell Fund program. Thank you for being here, Brianne.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
The Black Lives Matter uprising around the world is centered on recognizing the toll of police violence on Black bodies, but also on examining and dismantling the wider structural violence that Black and Brown bodies have endured for generations in the U.S. and around the world. The LGBTQ movement is also rooted in protesting police violence. Brianne, can you start us off with a little history of the Stonewall riots in Greenwich Village in June 1969?
Sure. So I just want to ground folks in the fact that Stonewall was a rebellion. It was an uprising, and it was a civil rights disobedience. It was not a riot, right? And so just reminding folks that LGBT folks, particularly Black LGBT folks, people of color, have always been at the center of fighting for the rights of not just LGBT people, but for all folks, right? And so many of us know that Stonewall was a rebellion that happened in a nightclub in New York. And so I just wanted to bring up two points that Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera were very instrumental in starting this rebellion, but also wanting to remind folks that there was a Black lesbian by the name of Storm DeLaver, and she threw a punch at a police officer. And so reminding folks that for a lot of LGBT folks, history is not really accurate as to like how we've showed up in movements and even how the modern LGBTQ rights movement started, right? And that now starting to get a full breath of what happened, who was all involved. And I am totally clear that that is a reflection of like our world being digital. And so for a lot of us, it takes time for us to actually understand like our place, how we showed up in the movement, and it's bringing a lot of light to the erasure of Black and Brown folks who have been like doing this work since the beginning of time.
Thank you. We also have Caro Acuña Olvera with us, a queer feminist of color and Albuquerque-based musician. Caro is one of the founding members of the Albuquerque Unoccupied Movement, and for full transparency, Caro is my housemate. Thank you for joining us, Caro.
Full transparency, yes. I just want to start this conversation off real quick just by just acknowledging some of our ancestors in the movement, in the Black movement. I want to say Audre Lorde's name, James Baldwin, Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, Storm, Langston Hughes, Gladys Bentley, Billy Strayhorn, Josephine Baker, Betsy Smith, Lucille Bogan, Big Mama Thornton, Ma Rainey, Johnny Mathis, and the Oya, who is a warrior out of the Yoruban tradition.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to kind of say that to kind of also equally ground us in what we're doing and why we're here. So, yeah, I agree. I think, you know, our movements have been happening, you know, since before Stonewall, you know. And it's kind of like that thing where when the peace movement happened in the 60s, everybody, you know, kind of got on board when white people got on board. But we tend to forget that black and brown bodies were uprising prior to that even happening. There was already movements all around the world with black and brown people since the inception of these Americas here. And so in that light, you know, looking at how distorted white supremacy continues to show up in how we talk about our history, and, you know, the distorted and toxic masculinity has just kind of given birth, you know, to things like colonization, patriarchy, capitalism, white supremacy, religion, politics, and so on. And so this masculine distortion has dominated our history and our humanity. And we have forgotten about the divine masculine. We have forgotten about the divine feminine and the divine androgyny and the symbolism that serves us as a community. You know, one of the things that, you know, I want to just kind of shed a little bit of light on is, you know, looking at lesbians and the Dyke March, you know, within this history as well, and looking at how, you know, their core values in terms of how we continue to organize forward, and maybe I can just speak to that a little bit more, but you know, just bringing up how the whiteness has kind of distorted everything, including our own liberation and how we've continued to liberate ourselves throughout our history.
Thank you, Caro. And we have Reverend A.O. Ferguson on the line, a lecturer and spiritual care specialist at UNMH, who focuses on palliative and psychosocial care. Thank you so much for being here on the show, A.O.
Thanks for having me.
And
I really appreciate being part of a panel with such esteemed young people. Young people who are going to carry us forward.
And
I think one of the things that I would like to highlight is how the history of black and brown people or people of color, how we have continued to press forward. And I think in this movement that is happening with Black Lives Matter in a time of COVID is how we will carry this forward. The history is Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera not only were spearheaders in the Stonewall riots for those 6 days, but they provided housing for homeless trans women of color throughout the rest of their lives. They were people who stood up for the injustices that were happening for young people throughout the country. So they changed through the things that they did as individuals and the way that they engaged as individuals. They changed the total color and the total awareness of what it meant to be a person, a sexual or gender minority. Marsha P. Johnson was asked in an interview, why aren't there more stars? Star being the street transvestite, a term we don't use anymore, street transvestite action revolutionaries. Why there aren't more stars in smaller towns? And she said her response was, start one. Nobody is going to help a transvestite if a transvestite doesn't stand up for themselves. And so, again, I use that language because that was the vernacular of the time. But I see young people now saying, this is my time. I am being impacted by this. What am I going to do about it? And I so appreciate that in this movement that's going on now and going forward.
And I want to ask all three of you, I think I'm going to start back with Breanne. Can you talk about how has this history been whitewashed?
Yeah, in so many different ways. I'm not sure if folks were familiar with the Stonewall movie that came out a couple of years ago. There was a lot of movement in POC communities because there was just a lot of white figures in that movie that had no actual, like, historical bearing on what happened at Stonewall. That's one. I think also just the whole LGBT pride movement has been like whitewashed. 2 years ago, there was a group in Columbus, Ohio, that went to Pride and actually held a silent protest to like speak the names of trans folks who have been murdered over the last couple of years. And white people in the crowd were flipping them off, spitting on folks. They cheered when the crowd actually arrested black and brown trans folks, right, who were actually like trying to hold space and wanting folks to remember that, like, yes, Pride is a celebration, right, but we also, it's our duty to like stand up and defend the folks that, you know, are no longer with us. Those are just two examples. And I also think it's really important too to just talk about the ways in which funding for LGBT groups is different depending on the color of folks' skin. So we see white organizations with million-dollar budgets. Black and brown trans folks are still trying to fight for funding that not only that we deserve, but that belongs to us, right? And so a lot of organizations that are like LGBT-focused actually have a hard time actually uplifting and honoring the lives of black and brown trans folks.
And Ayo, when we spoke earlier, you mentioned that the Black Lives Matter uprising pushes the LGBTQ community to dig deeper about race. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, I see it as an opportunity for us to be in the difficult questions. I think economic power, as Bria spoke about, allows us to kind of just look at the surface. And so let's celebrate. And celebration has its place, but then where does it take us into the rest of the movement? Where are we willing to stay in the difficult questions and invite voices that aren't heard historically into the conversation? And if we're not willing to do those two things, then, yeah, have a party for a month and then go back to life as normal. But I think we're not serving ourselves. We're not serving the community. That's not what these women chose to do. That's not what our leaders chose to do. That's not what James Baldwin was choosing to do when he chose to write about his three friends, Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, and the young man, the other young man that was killed, that his name is escaping me right now, when he chose to write that. And then I'm Not Your Negro was produced later on. Oh, Malcolm X. Mm. So are we willing to stay into the conversation and look at it as something other than a party for a week in our town and celebrate? And I'm encouraged by the young people who don't just do this one day and then go back to life as normal, because nobody knows what's normal, but they choose to stay in the conversation.
And Caro, the current Black Lives Movement is pushing all of us not only to reflect on race and discrimination, but also gender, including who's recognized as a victim of violence, whose voices are heard, and who's perceived to be involved in protests or looting or riots. And there's all kinds of divisions of like who is being pulled out as a victim and who is being pulled out as a perpetrator. How have you seen gender dynamics playing out in the Black Lives Matter and LGBTQ movements?
Well, it's always been an issue. And when I talk about gender, I want to just be really clear. When I talk about masculine and feminine, I'm talking about the divine masculine and feminine and the distorted masculinity. And it's played out in just so many ways, historically, so many ways. And like we spoke about before, when I was coming up as a young queer brown woman, all the clubs, all the spaces to go to were all, dominated by white male establishments, and really no spaces for us to even have, even to this day. So economically, the one hero that we have is, Catch One in Los Angeles with, the club that Jewel opened up, that was a reflection really of a real reflection for her as a Black dyke lesbian, kind of holding that same energy that Marsha P. Johnson held and Sylvia Rivera held, which is to care for your entire community. Mm. It's like it's a way that you bring in everybody because everybody in the community matters. So Catch One, the club in Los Angeles, was a space for that. It was a space for straight people, for queers, for everybody, and it was moved forward by a Black lesbian. And I think a lot of the conversations that Black feminism has to offer are the conversations that can continue to take us deeper within the LGBT community conversations, generally speaking, or for humanity, generally yeah. speaking.
Caro, I'm going to have to pause you there because I have to go to a break. I'm sorry about that, but we have to go to a quick break. If you want to join the conversation about the Black roots of pride, give us a call at 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We'll be back in a minute.
The Rothstein Donatelli Law Firm is committed to supporting KUNM, where the law firm's criminal practice can help clients petition state courts to permanently remove public records related to criminal charges and certain convictions. RothsteinLaw.com.
What happens in the practice room stays in the practice room, right? Well, not in the digital age and not during a pandemic. Pianist Charlie Albright has been offering a peek into his practice sessions, more on his method and the results of his hard work on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
What lies ahead in these turbulent times? On the next Alternative Radio, hear Naomi Klein and Arundhati Roy on Surviving the Future. That's Alternative Radio, Saturday evenings at 6, right here on 89.9 FM KUNM, KUNM.org, Albuquerque.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Yasmin Khan. This morning, we're talking about the contributions of Black and brown people, women and trans people in the Pride movement. What conversations about race, gender, and sexuality are coming up in your friend group or family this month? If you're part of a queer community, what do you love about it? What do you wish was different? Give us a call at 277-5866 or email letstalk@kunm.org. We are talking with Brianne Rivera, director of the Black Trans Fund of the Groundswell Fund Program. We also have Caro Acuña Olvera with us, a queer feminist of color and Albuquerque-based musician. And full disclosure, Caro is my housemate. We have Reverend A.O. Ferguson on the line, a lecturer and spiritual care specialist at UNMH. We have Freddie McCalmont Bell, owner of Freddie's Styling in Albuquerque and one of few Black drag queens in Albuquerque. And we have Tenzin Malika Houseman, a 16-year-old African-European American transgender teen. I want to welcome Freddie McCalmont Bell, a fashion stylist and owner of Freddie's Styling in Albuquerque. Freddie is one of very few Black drag queens here in Albuquerque. Welcome, Freddie.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to dig into a question of pride celebrations in many places have big corporate sponsors, and many narratives tend to be dominated by white, cis, gay men. Have you experienced that here in New Mexico?
Yes. I think Albuquerque Pride is, very generous in taking a lot of sponsorships from big corporations. Which, is all fine and dandy. At the end of the day, we want as much representation or as much allyship as possible. But I think that a lot of that needs to be transferred back into the community itself. We take for granted, I think, all of these companies saying, we're with you, we're with you, we're with you. But at the end of the day, they're only with us for 1 month. You can change your avatar on social media to the pride flag and say that you're with us, but then throughout, 365 days of the year, where is that voice? Where are you? Whereas I feel that we're taking for granted the fact that our own communities are doing so much for, you know, Black Lives Matter or the LGBTQ movement, but then we're not giving ourselves back to them. We, you know, need to start shopping locally. We need to start dining locally. There's a lot of LGBTQ places where we have a safe space that they are offering to us that I think a lot of people take for granted. And it just kind of seems as if corporate America or, you know, that capitalist kind of outlook on pride has really taken over the celebration itself, where we're not even celebrating the fact that we're being gay. We're celebrating the fact that we can buy these things that are gay. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what would you like to see be handled differently this year with pride celebrations and beyond?
This year, it's a little different, you know, with the entire pandemic happening, it's a little harder for us to get together and to celebrate queerness. But I know that a lot of local establishments are still celebrating Pride in the way that we can still be safe within CDC guidelines, but still being, you know, within our safe spaces. I think it's really, really important to highlight the people in your community and also getting back to where our roots are, you know, where I think we're neglecting the fact that, you know, trans women and trans women of color are the ones that started this entire thing, which, you know, if we go back to speaking, you know, about Black Lives Matter, is the fact that a lot of those voices are still being silenced. If we want Black lives to matter, all Black lives have to matter. So that's where I think, you know, we're taking... I keep saying we're taking for granted, but I genuinely feel, you know, as we've progressed into openly being queer, that we're forgetting where we came from and the people that are powerhouses in this community. Going forward for all Pride celebrations, I want extreme inclusivity. We tend to see, you know, if we go back to corporate America, where white cis men are becoming the voices for pride when they have never been the voice of pride. And it's kind of discouraging in the fact that we are definitely losing sight of what pride means when we feed into, you know, these big corporations that are trying to feed pride to us. So honestly, I think just going forward, it's mostly about, again, giving back to our community. We really need to stand together and highlight the people that have made this possible for us.
Mm. Brianne, what would you like to see be handled differently this year with Pride celebrations and beyond Pride?
To be honest, I've never been one to be like a big Pride celebrator just because of like my own orientation into Pride. And actually, I'm from Detroit. And so, like, kind of just seeing the labor of Black and brown trans folks just being used consistently without actually, like, thinking about their well-being. But one thing I would like to see differently this year for Pride, similar to what Freddie was saying, is, like, for me, Pride is every day. I wake up every day feeling prideful. And I do that, like, in my work, in my day-to-day interactions. So one of the things, there's two things I would like to see, like, more support for LGBT folks outside of Pride. And then also, I get frustrated a lot of times that the money that is donated, raised by a lot of these larger corporations doesn't actually trickle down to the communities who actually need it. So for me, I would like to see folks actually donating to grassroots organizations that are supporting Black and brown folks directly, right? And shifting that money away from this, I was going to use the quote, All Lives Matter LGBT fundraising, right? Because to be honest, those folks have always had support. They've always been well-resourced, right? And so I would just like to see folks giving shifting in this Pride season.
Mm. And Caro, what's coming up for you in this conversation about how Pride could be understood as a deeper, broader, more radical movement than the sort of capitalist white holiday it's been for some people? We've had quite a few conversations on this in the House.
So. So I think, you know, there's a reason why there has it traditionally been kind of a, you know, a dyke march. And the Dyke March is not just a cute party, you know? It's not just like, oh, the Dykes come out and all the people who identify as femme come out. You know, it's not about that. It's about some core values and the core values of the march itself. And it has sustained itself this way throughout history is, you know, and it's just really, for me, it's a call out to Pride worldwide right now to just like really like one, like, when you're organizing these, you know, when we're organizing Pride and we're organizing these marches, like to really put people of color, Black and brown people as leadership on boards, on fundraising, on how the money is spent, everything. The other thing that the Dyke March has done has been 100% volunteer run. There's been no corporate money. And the Dyke March has stood really strong on this issue because we've understood that, corporate America is run by white, straight, male, capitalist society and goes against the values of queer liberation and liberation for Black and brown folks and people and all marginalized communities. And, you know, also to build our pride with, you know, creativity, you know, that's another core value of the Dyke March is to build our pride with creativity and community. And corporations and financial violence have no place where we walk towards liberation. White supremacy and capitalism have a strong lack of imagination. They have no imagination. There's no imagination in that energy. And pride cannot be limited by the culture of white male supremacy. So, you know, I feel like if we take on values that already been put in place that have not been seen at all in any part of pride, the values are there. And the only ways that I've seen them historically, and they have shifted historically because Black and brown identified female, femme, have pushed to be at the forefront of that organizing. And so I feel like in every part of the organizing, whether it's the board, making this decision making is going to be really important in terms of how we move forward in pride. So I'm just really calling on all prides across the world to like decorporatize ourselves and put people of color in charge of the financial decisions, of all the decisions of how this rolls out, and to continue to give back to the community in that way.
Mm. Ayo, is there anything you'd like to see be handled differently this year in regards to Pride or beyond Pride?
Yeah. I think it's an opportunity for us to educate ourselves better. Learn more about our history and be in conversation with one another. And also, as Caro spoke to, become involved in our own communities. So there are a number of LGBT organizations that you can join a board, or you can become a volunteer, or you can offer your economic support to, your financial support to. But I think it's an opportunity to look at, reexamine who we are within the community, within the Pride community, within the LGBT community. As Freddie spoke to, let's support our LGBT people of color, the businesses that are owned by those places. So I think it's been covered. But whether you do a local organization or you go to a national or international organization, I think the other thing that for me that we really have to look at, and in the light of Black Lives Matter, is the violence that is being perpetrated against Black and brown people and people of color. How do we respond to that? How do we respond to, do we just have a day for trans remembrance? Or is it every day that we remember that women of color all over the world are being killed just because they're standing up for who they are?
Yeah, and I want to take this moment to lift up the name of Tony McDade, an African-American trans man who was shot and killed by Tallahassee police last month. Have you heard enough about Tony McDade as we see marches and vigils happening in recent days? What do you have to say, Brianne?
I actually have a difficult time talking about the violence that happens to Black trans folks. But one thing I will say is that it's not enough to say Tony McDade's name. Black trans folks in the movement have been under-resourced forever. And I think there is this problematic dichotomy that we have to, like, break up as a movement around, like, who we should support and why. And so, like, for a lot of trans masculine folks, their entry point is HIV testing and counseling. And that should not be the only ways in which that we should support trans masculine folks. And so in my work at BTF, I've been reaching out to more Black trans-led organizations to actually let them know that BTF is a resource. And all of my responses have been just gratitude from Black trans masculine-led groups that are, like, saying that, like, we never would have applied for this thing because we never get grants, or, like, we never get afforded these opportunities. And so I just want to remind folks that, like, yes, we should be speaking the names of the folks that we are losing in the world, right? But I think there's also a little bit more that we can be doing, and that's, like, direct supporting. So it's not enough to just share names and images of dead folks, right? But I think there's an action that comes behind it that actually shows communities that you honor them, that you support them, and that you actually want to change the conditions that are actually putting folks at higher risk for mortality.
And do you think that with now the sustained Black Lives Matter uprising, which is truly pushing for not stopping until change happens, policy changes, is that paving the way to get more long-term change that you're speaking of, Brianne?
To be honest, I'm kind of conflicted. I acknowledge the fact that the Black Lives Matter movement was started by Black women, queer women in particular, right? But I've been in a lot of spaces that are, like, Black Lives Matter spaces where the conversation around trans folks actually goes really left really quickly. And that has no reflection of the leadership. I think the original founders of Black Lives Matter have done a really good job in, like, engaging trans folks, right? But I think there is some work that needs to be done in individual chapters around just around the ways in which that folks are supported. I feel like it's mixed. So some people with their Black Lives Matter chapter have a better success of, like, actually being able to show up in the space as their authentic self and actually have their issues addressed amongst the group. And then other groups are just really struggling. And I want to remind folks that transphobia is not natural to Black and brown folks, right? And that transphobia is a direct correlation to white supremacy. And just reminding folks that, like, just because, just sometimes I feel like just because I'm a black trans person, it doesn't always mean that I get support from Black folks.
Mm. And while this historic Black Lives Matter uprising is happening, we're also all affected by the lingering menace of COVID. And some people have drawn parallels between the AIDS epidemic of the 80s and 90s and now the COVID pandemic. They've both disproportionately affected brown and black people. What similarities and differences do you see in terms of government response? Ayo, this is something that we talked about on the phone. Can you talk about some of the social stigma and some of the state and federal responses to COVID and how that's going to affect the LGBTQ community?
Sure. I think disproportionately black and brown people, as well as people of the LGBT community, have avoided health care based on the way that they have been treated historically. So disproportionately, black people have gotten substandard health care. Brown people have gotten substandard. They have been stigmatized. Some of the illnesses that or diseases that black and brown people are subject to have been chronic diseases that haven't been addressed. Part of that is economic. It costs a lot of money. People are underinsured. People are uninsured, and so to be able to go see a doctor, you allot your resources for your most basic needs. And because of economic factors, people have not been able to pursue health care.
Mm.
I think that happened during the AIDS crisis. I think it happens today. I also would like to include our Native population,
mm-hmm.
because education about what's going on was woefully slow in getting to those areas based on what the access people had. So if people didn't have access to the internet, or if they didn't have access to the information, they didn't know what kind of precautions to take. I think we're trying to get information out there. We're trying to get access out there. But it's similar to how kids are able to access computers to go to school. So it's similar to that. We're assuming that people have equal access when that is not the case.
And Freddie, I want to ask you before we move on, what kinds of COVID safe events are you seeing planned for this year's celebrations?
So I know this weekend, actually, if you're familiar with Sidewinder's Bar, they've actually kind of revamped themselves, let's say, into a bar and restaurant. So now they are S4200 on Central, but they are actually planning a park and drag show, which I am a part of. And we are encouraging people to stay in their cars, stay at a safe distance, of course, with whatever party that you bring. And we're going to have, you know, a plethora of different entertainers from the community, also people of color in the community. And the funds from that are going to be donated to the Black Lives Matter movement here in Albuquerque. Since we don't have necessarily an organization for the Black Lives Matter movement, I know that there are a couple of individuals that are meeting with the mayor and doing all that such to get that started. And we're actually funding this show to help, you know, donate those proceeds. So, this weekend we are doing a park and drag show. I know that there is going to be kind of like a pride procession. We're not necessarily allowed to have the parade. Of course, you know, with following CDC guidelines and making sure that everybody is kind of keeping their distance, we're not doing the full parade where we're blocking off the entire street, but we are having our own version where people are still somewhat celebrating on the traditional route for pride. But it's not going to be, of course, you know, the same where everybody's going to be outside of their cars and that kind of big party feeling. It's honestly just kind of showing that we are still here. Just because we can't have, you know, these giant celebrations, these giant after parties, again, which I feel kind of go against the whole idea of what pride should be. But, you know, even though we're having the opportunities to do pride this year, it is going to be taken in a safe direction. This weekend, I mean, definitely look out. There are plenty of advertisements and stuff on social media. The flyers are being posted for this show this weekend. So just kind of, you know, reach out to your community, see what's going on, just because I do know that there are plenty of establishments that are taking pride very, very seriously and very safely this year.
Thank you, Freddie. We have to go to a quick break. If you want to join the conversation about the Black Roots of Pride, give us a call at 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We'll be back in a minute.
Support provided by Weekly Alibi, covering news, arts, and entertainment for Albuquerque since 1992. The friends at Weekly Alibi invite the community to help support local independent journalism when it's needed the most. Info at alibi.com/friends.
If KUNM strikes a special chord with you, donate that old accord to keep the tunes coming. Turn your Beatle into the Beatles. Turn your Altima into the ultimate in great music. Have a Buick Century from the last century, donate it to us in this century. We accept just about anything with wheels and an engine. To find out if your car qualifies, call 888-KUNM-CAR. It just takes a few minutes. That's 888-KUNM-CAR or 888-586-6227.
Currently, oil and gas drilling is not allowed in a 10-mile buffer around New Mexico's Chaco Canyon. But that's scheduled to change soon, and the Trump administration is getting more input from the public on what should happen next. We'll hear about what Native groups are saying about this on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Yasmin Khan. We've heard this hour some history of the Black roots of Pride. How will you celebrate Pride this year? Are concerns about COVID changing your plans? How does the Black Lives Matter movement intersect with the LGBTQ movement in your life? Give us a call, 277-5866. We have a listener call from Albuquerque. Good morning, Daryl. You're on the air.
Hi. So I had a question for the panelists about the intersectionality of being non-white and gay at the same time. You had asked earlier about finding the community among gay people, and for me, as a non-white person, I found that extremely challenging throughout my life. And at one point, I thought I'd really succeeded by finding a group of gay outdoorsmen, you know, who really love to go backpacking and are interested in science and math, just like me. And it really seemed like that was the group of people, the group of gay people that I would belong in. But ultimately, I found that I was pushed out of that group for a lot of the reasons that I see. The Black Lives Matter movement talking about basically, you know, because as a non-white person, my value in that group was discounted. You know, I was seen as and what I'm wondering about is the extent to which other people. I feel like really alone in that because it's very hard to find a group of gay men who share my interests. And I'm just wondering about the extent to which other people of color in the gay community have experienced that, being, finding some sense of belonging at some point in a group of gay men, but ultimately being, you know, reduced to racial stereotypes through being exoticized or just, again, like being discounted as sort of the token diversity member of the group or something like that.
I'm sorry that happened to you, Daryl. That sounds really difficult. And thank you for sharing that. I want to throw that question out to Freddie. Do you have anything to say about the belonging and the looking for community here in Albuquerque? I know it can be hard, for sure.
It is extremely difficult. I am not going to sugarcoat it for you. There is a very, very niche amount of people in that minority. We don't have a lot of representation here. I mean, I myself am maybe one of three or four Black drag queens, Black entertainers in New Mexico that, you know, derive from, you know, the same venues, the same bars, what have you. But it is extremely difficult. So I'm not going to sugarcoat it in the fact that, like, you know, it gets better. I mean, I am still trying to figure out, you know, where I fit in here. Also being, you know, Black and queer, it is very, very difficult to kind of not be, as you said, Daryl, exoticized or pined after in a specific kind of way that you add a certain quote unquote flavor to your friend group. It is very, very difficult. My biggest, if I can alleviate anything off of your shoulders here, is maybe search in areas that aren't necessarily frequented by gay people. You will find a lot of resources outside of queer safe spaces as well. A lot of people don't feel necessarily comfortable being in, you know, the big party scene or, I mean, you said that your interests are math and science. I honestly highly suggest finding resources around town that utilize specific skill sets rather than specific sexual orientation. I know you want to find, kind of a relation to people within your sexual orientation, you will be extremely, I think, surprised by the amount of people that gravitate towards specific let's say, career goals or interests rather than their sexual orientation safe spaces. You will find a lot of people in many, many different areas. As much as I want to encourage you to, you know, go to LGBTQ functions, which also may be a really, really good resource for you as well, is just kind of finding your voice within the community. I can only speak from my personal experience, and I, to this day, am still trying to find where exactly it is that I fit in. It may become a little easier considering that, you know, I'm a performer. So I definitely have to deal with a lot of different kind of areas and groups. But again, I do apologize that is kind of what's happening to you and the way that you're feeling in this way. But if, again, I can alleviate anything, is kind of outsource.
Thank you, Freddie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also joining us this morning is Tenzin Malika Houseman, a 16-year-old African-European-American transgender teen. Welcome. Thank you for being here, Tenzin.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
So, Tenzin, we've been talking a lot about the history of the LGBTQ movement and how we've gotten here. Can you talk to us about how the Black Lives Matter uprising is influencing you as a young person?
Well, it's definitely influenced me, and it's spoken to me in a completely different way than I would expect it to speak to me, because, you know, I'll be speaking over it with my friends and everything like that, which are mainly white, but they usually all support me no matter what is going on in the world. But, well, like, how it's really spoken to me, I guess, in a way, is that, like, it's just made me want to use my voice and more and have a chance to speak out and, you know, have any way to support, like, just how we've gotten to this place and, like, how we've, like, over centuries asked for this and, like, our voices had not been heard. So, like, it's kind of sad that we had to resort to using, like, any type of violence to get to finally getting our voices heard. But hopefully in maybe a little bit of time, it will make a difference.
And Tenzin, what do you see for the future of the LGBTQ movement?
In the future, I feel that slowly but surely we will grow more as a community, and people be able to, find the people who they really can, like, be as their groups and have people that they know that they can relate to and always have there for each other. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to just, you know, keep doing fundraisers and keep being able to support and help people who need help in their time of need that are, you know, LGBTQ or whatever they are. Just be able to, you know, have a bigger community that will allow us to, like, have more support for each other.
Thank you. Yeah. So, Brianne, even though society has come a long way, people who are trans and queer are still discriminated against. What needs to happen to move forward? And you've also mentioned the importance of highlighting joy in narratives of the Black trans community. How can we move forward and support these stories in both the trans and the broader LGBTQ community?
Yeah, thank you. I think for me, one of the biggest moments of joy is actually talking to leaders of organizations, folks who are working within organizations and their memberships. So, you know, during my, like, intake calls for rapid response funding, folks are talking about the conditions, but it's in the way in which to talk about it that makes it, that shifts the focus from violence and discrimination, conditions that we didn't create, to actually conditions that we can create. So, like, for instance, like, a lot of the folks that we support sex workers, right? And so a lot of times when we're talking about dealing with, like, law enforcement, judges, criminal justice, right? They are framing it in a way that actually puts the love and the honor and support back on community members, and takes away from the violence and discrimination that happens within systems. I also want to name that one of the things that really frustrates me about this country is that we always make this excuse that there is not enough money and that's not true. The United States was built on the murder and the plundering of different groups, right? And so we have to be very clear about that. And I don't think, to be honest, I think that the majority of the support will actually come from community members and those people who are actually allies and support them. Not in this current government do I feel like that there will actually be any systemic changes that will actually improve the conditions for trans people, for LGBT folks. And we have to do that on our own, which is sad, right? And so saying all that to say is that I think the most immediate thing that we can do to support folks is actually supporting those folks on the ground with money, with resources, with other different types of support, right? Until we can get to a place where all of us in the United States are actually fighting towards one cause. One of the things that it reminds me of is like this conversation that's happening within Black communities around trans folks, right? And so like all of the negative things are being said, but then we are also expected to show up in spaces. And I know that there are folks who that's what they do because, you know, they're for the liberation of everyone. But yeah, I don't think that trans folks have been supported. I think that the supports now to me that I'm seeing feel very like performative. The same organizations and people that are actually talking about like Black Lives Matter, Black Trans Lives Matter, all of those things, right, are the same folks who don't pay us, are the same folks who won't like push us a grant, right? And so moving away from this whole idea that like activism is two things, right? Part of it is like the performance of activism and then the actual action behind it. So I want to see more action.
Mm. Tenzin, can you mention as a teenager, as a transgender high school student, what are some of the points of support that you are seeing that your community needs, and how can we help get you there? I think you're on mute, Tenzin. Oh no, I'm sorry, we can't hear you. Ayo, I'm going to move over to Ayo while we figure out Tenzin's sound. As a mental health care provider and as a reverend, what is the importance of highlighting joyful narratives in the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, I think we need to create space where people can tell us what that is for them. You know, for so many years, people have not been able to share their stories, or their stories have been discounted as not being relevant to the bigger narrative. So we create space, and in the work that I do, that's what I do, for people to tell us what is important to them.
Thank you.
For young people to be able to say, this is how I understand and appreciate the world.
Thank you, Ayo. And that's all the time we have for today. This is a much longer conversation, but we have 1 hour to dig into it. Many thanks to our guests, Brianne Rivera, Ayo Ferguson, Caro Acuna Olvera, Freddie McCalmont Bell, and Tenzin Malika Hausman. And we've switched our regular outro music to Ma Rainey, one of the earliest and most scandalous blues singers, who you'll hear right now with Prove It On Me Blues. The conversation doesn't have to end here. You can comment on our Facebook page, tag us on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM, or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed part of today's show or want to share it with your friends, find the show page on kunm.org or subscribe to our podcast. Just search Let's Talk New Mexico on your podcast app. Thank you, as always, to our engineer, Marino Spencer. Taylor Velasquez live tweeted the show. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls. And Hannah Colton produced today's show. I'm Yasmin Khan. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.